So chronic wasting disease is the only known transmissible spongiform encephalopathy that affects wild populations. So TSEs are a group of diseases that include scrapie in sheep. Most people probably remember bovine spongiform encephalopathy or mad cow disease in cattle, and then a collection of different sporadic or genetically determined human diseases like Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, fatal familial insomnia, and Gerstmann-Straussler-Shanker disease. These diseases, these TSEs, are among the rarest diseases in humans, and they're interesting because they're caused by a unique infectious agent that we term the prion. A prion is an acronym for proteinaceous infectious only. This means that the infectious agent is not a bacterium, it's not a virus, it's not a parasite, and according to the prion hypothesis, the infectious agent is made up solely of a misfolded protein. This protein derives from a protein that all mammals that we've looked at express, including humans. So there's no genetic code, there's no gene blueprint that encodes for this pathogen. It's thought to be composed primarily or entirely of a misfolded protein, like I said, that we all express and then becomes rogue and misfolds and becomes an infectious agent. So chronic wasting disease is the prion or TSE of cervids, deer, elk, moose, reindeer, caribou. And like I said, this is the only known prion disease that affects free-ranging wildlife populations, and therein kind of lies the problem because now CWD has spread from what was considered its origins here, out here in Fort Collins, Colorado, and southern Wyoming, to affect half of the lower 48 states in the U.S. And so it's really compared to other prion diseases seems to be highly transmissible and very stable in the environment, and I think that contributes greatly to its sustained transmission on the landscape.
Among, say, the deer population, it's fairly easy from one animal to transfer it to another. Is that accurate?
That's pretty accurate, yeah. So we know that from most of our studies, both experimentally, epidemiologically, and even mathematically modeled disease, that direct contact between deer and elk and other cervids is the primary means of transmission. However, we do know also that the best mathematical models that fit the prevalence and transmission rates that we're seeing on the landscape also include a indirect component, and that's where kind of this environmental contamination component comes into play.
Talk about the environmental contamination. From what I've read and what you apparently are seeing is that the prions just stay in the environment. Is that true?
That's right. So one of the unique features of the prion, in addition to its lack of a genetic blueprint, is its incredible stability. So it's extremely resistant to things that would kill normal pathogens. So, with things like acids, bases, UV irradiation, things that will destroy nucleic acids, obviously don't work against the prion because they have no nucleic acid component. But they're also resistant to things like proteases. These are enzymes that destroy normal proteins, but including the normally folded prion protein. But when it misfolds into its pathogenic form, it becomes highly stable, just biologically, so inside the host, as well as in the environment. So there have been studies that have shown that these prions can remain active and cause disease in animals for years, if not decades.
Is there a possible solution? I know you had outlined something that might work in terms of fire. Can you explain that?
Sure thing. So there are some things that will help to decrease the amount of prion titers, right? And so some of these things we use in the laboratory. Some of these things are employed at meat processing plants to make sure that BSE prions are destroyed if there are any in the meat industry. These are things, so typically in my laboratory, you would treat infected tissues with concentrated hydrochloric acid or sodium hydroxide, and then autoclave them for an extended period at a higher temperature than we autoclave other normal instruments or tissues that we're trying to decontaminate. So those are quite effective. Incineration is also very effective. And so that's kind of where the idea of trying perhaps burning prions from the landscape came into play. I should mention that my collaborators that I have in governmental agencies, both here and in Arkansas, this is still an exploratory idea because there's a lot we don't know about prions on the landscape in terms of how much prion are there. We assume, my lab is starting to look at prion loads in things like plants, feces that are deposited in the environment, in water sources. And we know that these prion loads are relatively low. We also know that prescribed burns that I think could be effective at eliminating these environmental sources, these contaminating prions on the landscape, are probably not the same temperatures that you're going to see in an incineration protocol, right? But given the low-level contamination that is likely to contaminate environments in CWD endemic areas, we think my idea is that the controlled burns would do a couple of things. One would be to eliminate the forage that cervids might eat that might be contaminated with prions that are excreted by into urine, feces, saliva, and those types of things. So it would eliminate that forage and hopefully break that indirect transmission. Also, the low-level prions that are likely there on the landscape. So while it's not going to reach incineration levels that you might see in a controlled environment like a laboratory or an industrial plant, we're talking about much lower prion loads. So my hypothesis would be that the levels of prion contamination would go down after these prescribed burns because you're starting with such a low amount of prions to begin with. So that's kind of the hypothesis. And so this is an idea that we'd like to explore and out here in the West and in Arkansas. The idea is to capitalize on already planned prescribed burns for other purposes, so mainly for wildfire mitigation or habitat restoration. So I would like for my graduate students and me to go into those areas and sample plants, feces from cervids, water sources, soil, those kinds of things, test them for prion contamination. And then after the prescribed burns, as the plants come back, to retest those areas and see if indeed we have lowered the contamination level. So that's the idea.
And I guess looking at CWD, it has a potential to be rather widespread given the current parameters. Is that true?
That's right. That's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up, Ken, because one of the reasons I'm proposing this idea is because of the sheer area that we're talking about. That is one of the reasons why I'm proposing this kind of mitigation strategy, because of the sheer area that we're talking about in CWD endemic areas that are potentially contaminated and contributes to the indirect transmission route. Other conventional means, such as the ones that I was talking about that we use in my laboratory, are just not feasible on this scale. You know, so it's not feasible to remove 2 inches of topsoil from all of the endemic areas, autoclave them, treat them with concentrated acids or bases, and then return it to the landscape. That's just not feasible. So you really have to start thinking about things that you can apply on a large scale, and you know, your options become fairly limited at that point. And that's when we started thinking about the idea of prescribed burning to eliminate that indirect transmission vector. There are some other things that you could try instead of, or maybe in addition to. There have been a couple of reports from some colleagues that I work with at the Prion Research Center here that have shown some efficacy for oral vaccines. Of course, then, you know, you have the problem of administering that vaccine to enough animals, the efficacy of that vaccine. There's actually some interesting research out of some laboratories at the University of Wisconsin from Joel Peterson and Christopher Johnson that have shown that lichen communities, these are microbial communities, complex microbial communities, that have been shown to decrease prion titers as well. There are some certain proteases that are produced, and so one might think about trying to plant a lot of lichen micro biota systems across the landscape. Those have their own problems, right? Is that introducing an invasive species to areas where they're not native, right? But these are kinds of some things that you need to think about on a larger scale that might work rather than, you know, common ways to eliminate infectivity in a concentrated area with, say, specified risk material at meat processing plants or contaminated materials in laboratories. So you have to think on a different scale on the landscape.